Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Well, hello there, guys, and welcome back to Sunday Vibes Extra Time with your three favourite footballing cherubs. Although only one of us really looks like a cherub, and
guilty.
That is Patrick Van Straten. Joe, more of a gargoyle. Brave. Anyway, today we're doing Inter Milan, and it's not quite a how-to fix, is it, guys?
No.
This is another sleeping giant. It's a casual conversation about current events at a football club. We've gone with a Nerazzurri by popular demand, and then Joe will be doing his facts with Rafa Benitez, straddled by Rose Ed. Your footballing opinions, or things you want to kick out of football even, this week.
Right, I'm going to kick us off with a little bit about the history of Inter Milan and what's happened slightly more recently behind the scenes at the club, because you guys know I like my finances in order.
It's weird that you do.
Why?
Because you just don't seem like the kind of guy who's into, you know, like...
He's got very green fingers. He loves the flip, does Joe?
I do like
He loves
flip.
Making money.
Money.
Yeah,
by any means.
You would have been one of those douchebags in the Wolf of Wall Street who was
would
just
I?
Like...
Wow.
Throw that dwarf at the wall.
All right, let's just relax. Move on to Inter Milan. Pre-1990, they were a bit of a powerhouse, weren't they? Obviously, across Europe, winning a couple of European Cups and generally probably recognised as one of the strongest clubs in Italy, if not Europe. But the 90s, lads, bit of a dark period for Inter Milan. Went a whole decade for the first time in the club's history without winning a Scudetto.
Really?
Yeah, in fact, they actually went 17 years without winning a Scudetto from 1990, despite the fact they did win three UEFA Cups in that time period.
Okay,
but on the other hand, they were seeing their rivals AC Milan
dominate,
winning the Champions League again and again and again, yeah, and winning a bunch of Scudetti. Though on the other hand, the one good thing that happened to Inter in the 90s, Zanetti arrived.
Okay. The tractor.
It is true. I'll give you an even brighter spot. Come the millennium, is the arrival of Robbie Keane when they crashed out of the Champions League
Rakova,
in the qualification.
Vieri, Keane.
They crashed out of the qualification with Robbie Keane in the side to the monsters Helsingborg.
Was that under Roy Hodgson?
I think it was under Lippi.
Oh, okay.
That pretty much sums up where they were in that sort of period. And then obviously the Calciopoli scandal hit and they regained some foothold within Serie A. I think they finished third that season, and I think Juve got relegated, didn't they? AC lost 8-odd points, something like that, maybe 18 mm-hmm. points,
yeah,
which meant
yeah.
Inter
Everyone got
gifted the trophy. Yeah. I haven't included that Scudetto within these ranks because, I don't know, it's a bit false, I think.
I get the
other clubs cheated, but Inter didn't win it, did they? Then, obviously, Mancini arrived and did a decent job, kind of settled everything down, obviously helped by the fact that the biggest rivals in Italy were under pressure and in different leagues and struggling throughout. Obviously, he won a couple of Scudettos. He won three in the end, including that supposed Calciopoli
win. He won three in
the
end, you're right.
He won three in the end. And then
pretty good.
Arrives Jose Mourinho, obviously the man that took them to the treble, the only club in Italian history to do so, I believe.
Only six other clubs have done that, gentlemen. Can you name them?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Man United.
Yes. Bayern Munich.
Ajax. I believe Feyenoord as well.
Benfica? No.
Real Madrid must have done it.
Ooh,
no, Barcelona have obviously done it. And the last one.
Is it Celtic?
I've lost track of which
Celtic.
One. Oh, but that's not treble.
We won four trophies that year. Five, in fact. Won the first Victoria Cup.
But they were in Scotland.
Anyway, let's get back to Inter Milan away from Celtic.
Okay.
That's what the people are here for. And... Mm. Obviously, Mourinho left, didn't he, after, I believe, was it 2010-11? He got poached by Real Madrid, got his head turned by Los Blancos, he left the club, and then it all sort of started to fall apart, really. And this is where we get to some interesting behind-the-scenes stuff, because in 2012, that was when Moratti originally tried to sell up. He thought, 2012, I'm guessing, he's 2 years off the back of a treble. He's lost Jose Mourinho. The club are clearly in a bit of a downward spiral. He tried to sell up to Kenny Huang, a Chinese businessman. The move collapsed.
Sick name.
The move collapsed, though.
Is that the guy from The Hangover?
No. What is that guy's name from The Hangover?
The actor?
Yeah.
Ken Jeong.
Anyway, Moratti tried to sell to him, but it collapsed. They ended up finishing ninth that season. I think he was trying to sell 70% of the business.
Okay.
Didn't manage to. 2013, he did manage to. He sold up to the Indonesians, mainly Thohir, I want to pronounce
Eric.
It. Eric Thohir, something like that. 70%, $500 million.
Who was Mr. B? What happened with him?
I'm not too sure. I've never heard of Mr. B.
B. Taucha boy or something like that. He was also involved in like an attempted takeover, right?
I'm not too sure.
They kept talking about Mr. B. In
Mr.
The
B sounds very ominous.
That, no, but B is in the animal character. The B.
Oh, really?
Which made it kind of adorable. Yeah. Oh, like Balamori. Balamori guy.
But he wasn't involved in this one. This was okay. The Indonesians. Okay. 70% they bought out of Moratti. So Moratti retained 30%, mm-hmm. but he was minority shareholder, obviously, at this stage. And they were promising to pump a load of money in Yarp. And bring them back to the super club that they should be, all the classic new owner phrases, but they still breached FFP. They had their squad limited within the Champions League. It was not very good for 3 years.
FFP has followed them around like a
all the time.
Spectre.
Yeah, like a dog on their back.
Yeah, that classic saying.
I don't know, I've made that. That's a bit
like
of a jalabas
on
that.
On their back.
But 2016 comes round, and the Indonesians decide they've enough is enough. 68.5% sold.
Whenever you say this, it's like all Indonesians.
I know.
Like had shares in Inter Milan.
Well, Thohir,
like, fuck this.
Thohir and Moratti agreed to sell a combined 68.5% to Suning Holdings.
The Chinese.
Current owners, the Chinese. Zhang Jindong comes in and purchases them. Suning Holdings. 68.5%, which effectively meant Moratti was gone. But Thohir did retain some stake in the business and he retained his position as chairman of the club, more importantly.
I believe he's also owner of Oxford.
Is he? That's pretty interesting.
What, United or City?
Oh, I think United.
There are two clubs, right?
Oh, I'm going to plump on United.
So he owned 31%, Thohir.
Okay.
And I believe he might still own 31%. He might have been bought out. I'm not entirely sure. I can't remember.
I think Thohir's still involved.
Quite hard to tell.
He is still involved, but he's no longer chairman.
No.
His chairmanship has been revoked and has been given to Zhang Quan Yang, aka
the 26-year-old,
the son of the owner.
Classic.
The classic move that we see working left, right, and centre across Europe.
And they also own Jiangsu Suning, right?
They do also own Jiangsu Suning. And I did a little bit of research on Suning Holdings because I wanted to know more about them and whether or not
follow
they
the money.
Are... A serious. I'm going to take this seriously, but like you said, they
Joe
also
vetted
own
them in half a day.
I did. Vet
dived
and
into Bitcoin.
It's a little bit dodgy. I don't want to say it's totally dodgy, but I mean, founded in 1990, rank amongst the top three non-state-owned enterprises in China. Mm-hmm. They actually are involved. They've got their fingers in a lot of pies.
What's the Chinese equivalent of pie?
Dumplings. I'm not sure.
Yeah, probably.
Got their fingers in a lot of dumplings. They've got retail, real estate, sport media, entertainment, investment, financial services, to name but a few.
God.
So they're all over the place. They've got 1,600 stores across Asia.
Yeah.
What?
And $50 billion estimated
Sorry,
annual sales.
Sorry, you said
sales.
Stores? Sorry, what do they sell?
They sell a number of different things. They're involved in retail. So they've got a retail
arm.
Okay,
right. Because all I heard was financial services. And I was like, what sort of shop?
So they've got,
do they
so, they've
have?
Got so they've got like Suning Real Estate. They've got Suning Retail. Okay. They've got Suning.
Well, real estate. It's real. All of these places are real estate.
Like vacuum packed accountants that you can just take.
Yeah, exactly. Or like you turn up and you're like, "Hi, I want to like you know conceal some taxes," and they're like, "Cool.
Well,
go over to our genius."
It's funny. It's funny you mentioned. It's funny you mentioned that. It's funny you mentioned that because obviously CCTV, which is a Chinese, I think it's Chinese state run TV production company.
Yeah.
Produced a documentary in, I think, 2016, 17, I want to say, around Suning and their ownership of Inter Milan and a number of other Chinese companies' investment in European football clubs, and basically made the accusations that they were money laundering.
I mean,
overseas.
In China, that is extremely brave.
Yeah. No, it's state-owned. It's a state-owned media outlet doing this.
Okay.
Basically,
that
made a couple of.
That's quite worrying.
Made a. They were hinting at.
Well,
hinting at. From the articles I read, anyway.
There's a massive gambling problem as part of Chinese culture, and the president, in order for people to take domestic football seriously, went on a huge purge when it came to gambling at every level of football. So that might have something to do with it. I've got a bit of colour, only a couple of points.
Go on.
That maybe, you know.
Sorry, I'm just getting over the use of the word purge in relation to a communist country. Where have I heard this before?
Like quite historic. The Long Walk and all that. Anyway, Chinese owners. Yeah, so I did a little bit of research because I know you're going to touch upon this, but just a couple of points that might add to what you were saying. So Xi Jinping, who is the Chinese president, wants the Chinese sports economy to be worth $850 billion I don't know what sort of time frame, but that's twice the current global value of the sporting economy.
Sorry, what?
So
of what of China, the Chinese sporting economy, or of all,
or the global?
No, all global. At least in this article I've read, the global sporting economy is worth 450 billion. Oh, well, 425. He wants one worth 850.
We might as well say, like, I want my face on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, sure. All right.
I mean, punchy, but I like his ambition.
You know what they say, mate? Reach for the stars. If you fall short, you'll land on the moon.
And that's definitely government. What they say. That's what Neil Armstrong was doing.
The government are putting their money where their mouth is. They invested 1.3 billion. Into the CSL, oh, didn't they?
Hell.
To acquire all rights, not that they were hotly contested.
Sure.
You know, for a 5-year deal, like I said, for all media rights to the Chinese Super League. So that money is obviously to create strong foundations because they want to build a footballing dynasty, don't they? They've got campuses going up across every major city. They're trying to mirror a bunch of stuff that the UAE are doing to promote football in schools and amongst youngsters. And they've got dutiful billionaires buying shares in football clubs so they can sort of transport that football culture back to China and all these best practices.
Well,
you know, so the Chinese have shares in Atletico, in Man City.
Sure.
I mean, the AC Milan project didn't go according to plan. But
are we seeing Inter then as essentially a kind of vanity exercise or as a propaganda exercise for the larger Suning football kind of project?
I think...
Because didn't they loan someone weird from Suning to Inter, like Trent Sainsbury someone?
There's a lot of weird loans going on. So a lot of Chinese players appearing in the Portuguese second division.
Okay.
But it's more, I think, like a very expensive fact-finding mission.
Okay. So the idea is we'll buy a club and then we will learn from them how to run another club.
Yes.
But the way we've done that is by buying a club which is not notably well run.
And I think by acquiring these clubs and taking them on pre-season tours to China, making them... you know, increasing their presence in that market, they're hoping to borrow some of that club's currency in order to get their own domestic populace interested, I guess.
But they are also increasing the club's pockets by doing that. Inter Milan last year posted
laundering, right?
No.
Oh, right.
No. I don't know whether they're actually money laundering. That's just an accusation made by the Chinese CCTV. But they did announce record revenue last year, $400 million Inter Milan, of which... mainly down to massive commercial deals in Asia.
Sure.
Thanks to the Suning Holdings Group.
We discussed this on the AC Milan podcast, didn't we?
Yeah.
They massively overestimated how much they'd earn from the Chinese market.
Yeah. But Inter Milan's commercial revenue year on year has tripled the past three seasons.
Wow.
So I think that's pretty impressive. You have to say that's pretty impressive. And to turn over $400 million is no mean feat for any club.
It's impressive once it's sustainable.
Yeah, once it's sustainable, of course. But
what you've said to me makes me think that it might not be.
When you look at Juventus turning over $500 million, it's not a mile off. It's not a mile off. But the trouble is they are borrowing a lot. There is a lot going out the door. They're making year-on-year losses.
Do you know who's joining Inter in January, apparently?
Who?
I don't want to step on your toes if you've done research for this, no. Beppe Morata from Juventus. He's gone. 61-year-old apparently joining Inter Milan in January.
Well, that would be interesting because at the moment they are without...
chief exec or something.
Well, I imagine it'll be a sporting director because at the moment they are out without one. They sacked... They sacked Walter Sabatini in March, I believe, over supposed differences in footballing opinion. Basically means that Walter Sabatini didn't agree with the lack of investment the club was seeing from the Chinese owners, I think.
Yeah. Well, early this year, February,
and then
2018, fans were kicking off a shitstorm at the Suning
Group. He's gone to Sampdoria now, so he's now Sampdoria's sporting director,
who are not doing well.
So I looked at a little bit of their investment.
Beppe Morata is a good is a good kind of like.
Did I say Morata? I think I might have Morata.
Possibly, Morata, yeah.
But
yeah,
like, he's a good club leader.
Yeah,
like, he's organised, and Juventus have been in profit since forever. So
it would appear so.
Well, he's been there. He was at Juventus for 7-8 years, so it coincided with their dramatic transformation, didn't it? So
yeah.
Well, I looked at the investment from Suning, and although Inter fans, I think, do have a right to be angry, they have put up some money.
Yeah,
they have put up some money. £142 million they spent in 2016. They spent £104 million in 2017. And then 2018, this summer, which is probably where they've been at the most angry, to be fair, Inter Milan fans. They only spent £65 million. But in terms of per season investment, I worked it out, net investment, it's looking at roughly £50 million per season net investment into the club in terms of transfers.
I've got
they've been spending.
Yeah, I've got some other numbers that sort of flesh that out. But no, crack on. That's good stuff. That's really good access into my...
I mean, I don't know whether you want to take over at this stage, because I looked at some of the investment and obviously it started heavy, the likes of João Mário and Gabigol, and it's now kind of fizzled down to a lot of money on Nainggolan and then not much on other people. But their transfer policy, to me, is pretty... like odd. In 2016 they made 45 loans. In 2017 they loaned 53 players.
They're the Italian Chelsea. This season gone by, 17-18, I think they had 30 players return to the club from loan.
Yeah, 30. But in 2017-18 they loaned or free 53 players.
But do they have a youth academy which is as good as Chelsea's? Like, Chelsea's makes sense to me because Chelsea go out and buy a load of talent and have a really good academy. Do Inter have
it
that?
It wouldn't appear so.
Feels like it mirrors it to me, mate. They've both done TV shows, reality TV shows, offering members of the public professional contracts.
I don't know if the calibre of talent coming out of that, out of the academy is as good as maybe their rivals, because, I mean, last year, for example, and I'll cover this in more detail later, they sold sort of 10 players for under £10 million.
Right.
So there's a lot of
bad. That's money.
Nearly men coming out of the academy.
Okay. It's not the worst thing.
It's the general impression I get. I would like to caveat this with us three didn't do this research together, and it's all been done half a day. If any Italian football fans want to let us know more, please get at us on Twitter.
When I was looking at some of their signings and stuff, it feels a little bit like chucking shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. There's a lot of £10 to £20 million signings.
Yeah,
I haven't.
But I think it's pretty 50-50. Shall I go? Shall I do a little bit more scene setting and then go into my transfers, and then you can come back and elaborate on some of the players? I'll bring them up
if you want to. I haven't got too much on many of the players.
I did a little brief history as well. I think but mine is mainly transfer based, because what I've tried to cover is recent transfer policy. I think you've rounded off quite a lot of it nicely already. But what I will say is, during that period of dominance, so the last time someone won the Scudetto, before Juventus was 10-11, and that was AC Milan with Allegri. So before that, like you said, Inter winning 5 titles, and during that period, they had developed a great habit at picking up bargains from Spain and bargains from the top clubs. So Samuel Eto'o is a part exchange. We all know with Zlatan, and we all know who got the better end of that deal. Schneider cost €15 million. 1.5, that is.
That was decent at the time. It's still cheap.
He should have won the Ballon d'Or.
It was quite punchy, but given the calibre of player...
They spent a lot on Melito as well.
Yeah,
right?
And what they got out of him for that price.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Walter Samuel, €16 million, but that was less than Real Madrid paid Roma for his services, significantly less. Got Cambiaso on a free.
That's a great mental bit of business.
Yeah. That's mental.
And they also signed, not from Spain, but players who had been, well, particularly Mota, who'd been spurned by La Liga. Mota and Milito from Genoa for a combined €38 million, which was, of course, much loftier back then. They even threw some players in there as well, Bonucci being one.
Jesus.
Yeah, see, that was a bit of a mistake.
There was a period, though, wasn't there, with Inter, where, like, if you were leaving Barcelona or Real Madrid, you went to Inter Milan. So, like, Figo did it, Quaresma did it, obviously Samuel did it, like, a bunch of those guys. Cambiaso,
a little bit later down the line.
Mota as well, you know, was originally a Barcelona player. All those guys, like, just kind of, where will I go after this?
Well, and Icardi Inter just picked them up those for nothing. Steps as well, didn't it?
Well, yeah, though he went to Samp first, right?
Oh, yeah.
What Juventus started doing 10, 15 years later, really, with the likes of Pirlo. Anyway, so those were the players that were essentially the core of a side that won the treble that Joe was talking about, and I think they're a good reference point. As like I said, Inter haven't been as in fine fettle since then, have they? And that wasn't really achieved with just, you know, Jose playing defensive football. That 2009-10 team pretty much had it all, didn't they? They were the top goal scorers in the league in both seasons Jose was in charge and conceded the fewest. I mean, they played counter-attacking football, don't get me wrong, but they were strong in all areas. So that's just a bit of scene setting. Let's move on to more recent events. So you've taken, I've already talked about Suning taking 70% from the businessman that you mentioned. And we've sort of fast-forwarded to 2018 where the fans aren't happy with Suning. And that's, I suppose, Spalletti and finishing fourth last season has quelled that somewhat. But the four finishes before that, seventh, fourth, eighth, fifth,
yeah,
endemic of a team that are really struggling to get to that next level. And that's kind of what we're trying to look at here, isn't it? How they can possibly do that. But even as recently as the managers, you know, before Spalletti or the 12 months that preceded Spalletti, they went through three managers, Mancini, Piolo, De Boer.
Yeah.
And Spalletti's tenure didn't get off to the greatest of starts, gentlemen. They actually had the same amount of points after 25 games. Yes, after 25 games under those three managers in 16-17 than Spalletti garnered in 17, in his first season.
Because I felt like Spalletti started all right. Was he not top of the league at Christmas?
They
Spalletti?
Were really, really, yeah, but after 25 games, like, so after probably 18, 19 games, they were fantastic. Do you remember they had that run around January where they could not score?
Yeah, yeah.
Without a point.
Because I'm pretty sure they were close to the top of the league, if not top of the league coming into Christmas.
Yeah, they were definitely up there, but then there was a horrible run.
Yeah.
So I think that was what really kind of brought them back to the pack.
Yeah. And essentially, the unrest crept back in after that period devoid of points, and they had to rely on a last minute strike from Vecino to secure Champions League football, didn't they, against Lazio? And that really has, well, that was a sliding doors moment, because without that Champions League money, FFP once again could have caught back up with them. So let's move on to hit and miss, a game I've developed, gentlemen.
I'm excited about this.
A game you've not only invented but you've developed.
I'm so excited about this.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's fairly simple in concept, Pato, but, you know, it'd be the execution.
I'm excited. I'm actually excited. I love mini
set
games.
Set this apart. So, what I've done is...
WarioWare.
I've gone back to... I've kind of revisited all the transfer windows from 18-19 until that 10-11 season, which is when, like I said, someone else but Juventus won the league. Now, during that period as a whole, Joe touched upon it, so since 10-11, Inter have spent 610 mil.
Jesus.
Yeah. With £443 million worth of transfers going out for a net spend of plus 167 mil.
Sorry, how many years is that since 2010-11?
Since 2010-11.
That's not bad at all.
It's not, but it's the three recent years where they've invested just poorly.
Well, the question is whether the players are good, but in terms of money-wise, that's fine.
But since
I quite like that.
It's sustainable. It's become more sustainable in recent seasons, but I also think that amount kind of... The fact they've only spent that is quite middling.
Okay.
I'd expect them to have spent a little bit more. And conversely, Juventus in that same period have spent 973 million. Spending more... I would have expected Inter to have spent more if they wanted to compete, that is. Let's caveat with that. So Juventus have spent 973 million in this period with 593 million going out for a net spend of 380. I mean, only 275 when you include Ronaldo, who was somewhat of an anomaly in Serie A's recent transfer business, but it happened. So, almost double that of, 320. Over double. Because that's maths, gentlemen. That's number one. So, yes, Juventus spent over double that of Inter Milan. Right, let's move on to the transfer window, starting with the most recent one. So, £65 million in, £76 million out. Like I said, sold 10 players for under £10 million. Which would suggest that they're not being great at generating fees for their bit part players.
Mm.
I think Nagatomo went to Turkey for about $2 million, and he's a starting centre, a starting wing back about a year, 2 years ago. Anyway, so Nainggolan, who I discussed on today's Sunday Vibes, €38 million from Roma, 8 appearances in the league, two goal contributions. What do we think to him?
I didn't like it at the time, and I still don't like it.
No, I think his age profile is not great, his injury profile not great, and Spalletti took a massive gamble and it's not paid off.
He's a good player, but come on.
I can only see him physically deteriorate as well.
And he's so reliant on his physicality.
And at 38 million, you can't afford that if you're Inter Milan.
It was supposedly less than that because Davin Zanton went the other way for almost 10. But okay, we're counting that as a miss. Right, I want you to elaborate. If you've scripted anything about these guys, got any anecdotes, then please, fire away. Lautaro Martinez, the 21-year-old forward who got some €23 million from Racing Club. 4 starts, 2 goals this campaign.
Slow start.
This is his first season.
Yeah.
He only arrived in the summer, so I'm not really comfortable calling him either. But overall, I think this is a hit.
He should turn out to be a hit.
I think it was an exciting signing
when it happened, but again, slow start.
He's got under 500 minutes this season, but in that time, he's averaged, I think, nearly 3 shots in the box per game. And that's a guy coming out of Argentina, going straight into one of Europe's top 5 leagues.
Yeah.
He's pretty quick. He's 21, which is something they desperately need. He's a backup to Icardi, who's better than Christ knows whatever pubber they had there last season. So overall, I think it's a transfer they needed to make. Whether it's a hit or miss, time will tell. But he looks good. It's the kind of bug. It's the kind of thing I want Inter.
I think we both say that's a hit.
Yeah,
I like him. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, I imagine we'll come on to that. But I think he's actually quite an interesting talent.
On to Politano, who I really like. So last season, heavily dependent on Perisic and Icardi, contributed to 40 of their 60 goals. They clearly needed more goals from midfield. We like Candreva, I think, as a three, but he didn't contribute to a goal after Christmas, did he? Or something horrific like that. His form dropped off a cliff. And Politano at the start of this season, 10 starts, 5 goal contributions.
But he's
on loan from Sassuolo with a obligation to buy at the end of his loan.
It's an Italian loan.
Here's what I will say is that I know that we're going to probably talk about players we think we should sign
a little bit
later. But you mentioned it there. Forgetting goal contributions, their goals from across the pitch are nothing short of a disgrace.
The D word.
Over the last two seasons. In 2017-18, Icardi got 29, Perisic got 11. Their third top scorer was Skriniar.
With four.
Four in the league.
Skriniar's averaging 0.4 key passes a game this game.
How has that happened? In 16-17, Icardi 24, Perisic 11 again. Eder was the third top scorer.
Let's get into it later, but I do feel like they've taken steps to address that. They brought in Keita, they bought Jan Karamo, who's back on loan.
Eder's in China now as well, so forget about it.
And getting Martinez in, it's just like, there's an acknowledgement within the club that this is an issue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still
haven't addressed the goals for midfield for me.
These loan deals that they've started to roll out widely across the club. So I read an interesting article where in 2015 that basically said that two of their the club's hierarchy, which I'll no doubt get to in my notes soon enough, developed something called the Inter Blueprint.
Oh,
now, basically, they wanted to spread out because of financial fair play. They needed to pay money over longer periods of time. Now, basically, this is reliant on clubs playing ball, or the clubs playing ball, and they might pay a bit of a surplus on top of their original fees for these players, maybe domestically. But I think the Politano deal is emblematic of that. It's a loan with an obligation to buy. We're going to talk about Caramo, is it Pato?
Caramo.
Caramo, who they bought, I think. There's a lot of cases then buying players and loaning them for two seasons and paying fees. So sort of a la Bayern Munich with James Rodriguez, and then paying at the end of a third year or the end of a second year. And that's really enabling them to dodge FFP for the time being.
Do you think, I kind of feel like clubs behind the scenes have come to some sort of odd agreement that this is going to be the case going forward as a way of dodging FFP. It's not just buying it. Like, Juve have started doing it, haven't they? With Kingsley Coman.
There's only so long you can dodge for. Like, you're going to have to pay eventually. And then it lets you spread payout.
PSG did it with Mbappe and Monaco. But this is obvious. Like, there's no reason these clubs would be helping each other out in this way unless there was some sort of agreement behind the scenes that
you'd
said,
you'd probably pay a little bit more. Yeah,
let's do it. I'll pay more. Like that.
I don't think you'd find the legal top teams in the same domestic division helping each other out in the same way either.
Okay.
I do think a Juventus probably wouldn't be willing to do this for Milan. I could be wrong, but the general impression is that doesn't happen. So the side has Amor on a free from Juventus, De Vrij on a free, and Keita Baudi on loan. Let's get a quick fire answer.
De Vrij is a massive hit.
Hang on, we didn't rate Politano, did we?
Oh well, I'm putting down
Politano's
a hit.
De Vrij.
Politano's a qualified hit.
I think De Vrij is a hit. On a free, you just can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. Worst comes to worst, you're making 20 million on De Vrij.
And they had a bunch of old centre backs. Like, I'm fine with De Vrij.
Yeah, I think that's a hit. Who were the other names? Keita Balde should be a hit. Hopefully, will be a hit.
Was that an obligation to buy as well? Did you say?
I'm not sure if it's an option or an obligation, but either way, it's around 30 million euros. It's quite punchy.
Again, I think overall, probably a hit. 23-year-old.
And then who was the last one for
Schalke? He's really come into form recently, Keita Balde.
Started the season very slowly, didn't he?
He did. So, Asamoah, I think you've got to qualify as a hit on a free transfer.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But he's paying more than I'd like.
And he's playing at left back.
And on the left wing.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily mind that. But my issue is more that Dalbert should be playing instead. But we can come to that later.
I've touched upon Dalbert as well. Vyshalko on loan.
Sure,
that's a good hit.
Signing. Like I said, 30 players returning back from loan. The only notable outs, Kondogbia, 25 million to Valencia.
I think that's a negative move, isn't it? But he just wasn't working there, was it? Because he should.
What do you think? Would you have kept Kondogbia?
Kondogbia should be a hit on paper. Like, if you've got a Kondogbia in your side, I don't see why you sell him.
If you sold him to do other things in the market, I'm fine with it. Because actually, central midfield wise, they're stacked. That's the one position on the pitch where they've got tons and tons of guys. Mm-hmm. I probably would have kept Kondogbia and tried to sell João Mário.
Who's had a bit of a renaissance at the start of this season.
Yeah, but I just don't think he's a great fit. And he's actually one of those players that's a bit of a problem. Like, he's difficult to work out what he does. But I think, I probably would have kept Kondogbia.
I would have as well.
But it's not a tragedy that they let him go. Who cares?
We're going for a miss.
And I think he probably wanted to go.
I think if you're going to sell Kondogbia to bring in Nainggolan, I think that compounds it as a miss. And David Santon hit. I don't think he was ever going to have a long-term future at Inter Milan, though.
Yeah, whatever.
He's just not of that calibre, is he?
But he's an Inter boy.
So it's worth going over that last window in a little bit more detail, just because it's the most up-to-date. But more hits there than misses.
Yeah, I think that is probably their best window, though, in 5 seasons.
I feel like that's been correcting the issues of previous windows.
Yeah.
That one.
So let's revisit now a little bit more speed. So 17-18, £104 million in, £67 million out. And the ins, some of the notable ins included Dalbert, so he's 25 now, he's a left-sided defender, isn't he? £19 million. He's only made 9 starts in a season and a bit since then.
He is good, though.
So you like Dalbert?
I haven't heard a lot about Dalbert.
Do you want to save your Dalbert a bit, or just punctuate my bit with your?
He's great. He's from Nice. He came out of Nice. He's a Brazilian. He's a Brazilian left back.
Why has he played 9 starts in a year and a half?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, it just seems like he wasn't fancied. Nagatomo was still playing before. Mm. Obviously now Asamoah is there and he's playing instead. But there are 2 players on Inter Milan who rank in the top 5% in Serie A for defensive actions per 90 minutes, tackles and interceptions, and those two are Brozovic and Dalbert. I think he makes 5.1 tackles and interceptions per 90 minutes. Pretty decent on the ball. Reasonably mobile as well. I think he's 25 now. Yeah. So, decent age profile.
Tiny, tiny sample size.
Yeah, though also he was very, very good at Nice. So, you can kind of look at this overall and think, well, we're getting a decent picture of a good player. And I would rather play him. He's more of an investment than Asamoah. But overall, I think that Spalletti's time has been kind of... It's been marked by an unwillingness to trust young players and develop them, and rather just to rely on kind of old guys.
Yeah, when I was looking at it, I identified left back as a potential issue for them. Really? If Dalbert's not going to start, then you're going to have to bring a left back in, because
Dalbert's more of a left-sided central defender.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
No, he was playing left back.
Because I think if you look at Asamoah
even more puzzling then.
I don't think Asamoah is anywhere near the caliber that's going to win you a Scudetto as a left back.
I mean, he was a useful part on a Juventus side.
Yeah, but one of the most dominant Juventus.
I agree. You'd absolutely want to see Dalbert come into the team. And if he doesn't do that, they need to move him on if he genuinely can't impress over Asamoah. But
step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's still relatively early in the season.
Right, okay. So Dalbert, we're going with a hit for 19 million. Given his potential, I mean, his His output has
been a question mark next to Dalbert. He's a hit, he's a potential hit.
Yeah, I'd say actually at the moment, like he's a miss. Like Spalletti seems to think he's a miss.
He's played nine. But he's had nine starts.
Was he the sort of signing they should have made? Yes, he was.
Okay, so we're going with neither. That's a mixed bag. And that there's a massive TBC hanging over Dalbert as to whether he'll fit in this current Inter Milan setup. No doubt, you know, this issue with not trusting youth is coming from pressure to turn this situation around straight away. Skriniar,
massive hit.
Yeah.
Hit.
By Jove, has this kid got talent? He's got pretty much everything. 38 appearances in his first season in the league, averaging 70 passes per game, 3.2 tackles and interceptions in 17-18.
He's not going to be there for much
that
longer.
That was up from the year before, where he was at Sampdoria. So it didn't take long to adjust at all. And
he's got a maximum of a year left in him at Inter.
And at Champions League level, he's been fantastic this season. Just seemingly has it all. I prior to the Tottenham game, wasn't aware sort of how brave he was stepping out of the line and distributing it. Some of his passing is crisp.
Now that Van Dijk's at Liverpool, you've got to think that Skriniar is probably the most valuable centre-back in the world who's not at a top
yeah.
team.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think
would you say?
Their profile quite similar in a lot of ways, actually.
I wonder about Real Madrid looking at him as a Ramos replacement in the long term.
Wouldn't be surprised. Guy's only 23.
Well, I don't know.
I will say he's played in more conservative defences than Ramos has.
Expensive though, he's going to be very expensive to get out of Milan.
I mean, Man United are linked him every window. Yeah, and I imagine they will be forever.
Yeah.
William Carvalho, Mark 2. Next up is Vecino, 27, central midfielder, 29 apps last season, 5 goal contributions, obviously one being that momentous goal that put them in the Champions League. So, a rotation, a first team player, but elements of rotation about his tenure at Inter Milan. I would say a useful squad player all round.
How much did they pay for him?
Ooh. Why haven't I marked that down? I think it was around 19.
It's a bit pricey, but I don't mind it. He's a decent
squad player. Let's give him a hit.
My issue is more that I don't know why they signed him, but we can come on to that.
Okay, sure. And then they sold Banega for 6.3 million euros.
Mental.
Which is crazy, because he's proved at Sevilla since that he can still dictate tempo. He's still got unbelievable passing figures
and dribbling, ball progression numbers, creativity. Unbelievable passing
in the final third.
Still great defensive numbers as well. Like, I mean, the Arsenal have been linked to him the last couple of windows and for about 25 mil. So if they've passed up 19 mil just because they couldn't be asked. And I looked at his numbers for Inter Milan that season he was there. They were great when he played.
Yeah.
Same as Gabigol's actually were when he played. But I don't know.
Didn't fit.
Well, he's got unfinished business, hasn't he? He's announced this week.
Hey, Gabby,
he's at Inter Milan. Yeah, he's gone back to Brazil and he's crushed it. So let's see if
how's he still only 22?
Release Football Manager game. He's piping up again.
Let's see if Spalletti is going to be open to giving him a second chance. Now, I think Banega is a good representation of how Inter Milan often jump the gun. I suppose this is as a result of having such a high turnover manager-wise, but players like Kovacic have left as well. Shaqiri, I thought, you know, maybe for not as much as they should have gone for, that could have been useful in the long run, but we'll get into their transfer window. So 16-17, £142 million in, so one of the windows you mentioned, Joe, buying the likes of João Mário Barbosa and Candreva.
This was one of the really grim windows.
Yeah, Candreva was the best buy in there for 19
this
mil.
This was a rank window.
I think Barbosa was a sensible buy. I think João Mário, I understand why they bought
38
him,
million they spent on João Mário.
Yeah, but Candreva, I mean, Candreva had decent numbers, but I feel like that's because he kind of had to. Like, they played him so relentlessly.
But this was like 15-16. So this is not the era of
16-17.
Was it 16-17? This is like João Mário for 38
this
mil.
This window does not
a season
me
later
joy.
They were loaning him out to West Ham.
I know, I agree, but it's like
this will be consistent miss.
It's uninspiring. I mean, they've now got an old Candreva on their books, which I do not care for.
Transfer windows were celebrations, this one would be a bouncy, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Awful.
Straight up bouncy material. Trash. And they sold Diego Laxalt for 5.2 mil. He's been recently acquired by AC for...
Reel them off then. Quickly reel off the ins and we'll just go...
They're the notable ones. All so right. We've got Mario Barbosa, Candreva. I think... Are we going to go miss, hit?
I'd say
27
miss.
Million on Gabigol.
I'd say miss, qualified miss.
Like there was in there as well. There was like Jovetic at 12 mil.
Jovetic for 12 mil is fine. That's a perfectly sensible move. If he'd stayed fit, he'd have been great. That's always been the story with Jovetic.
Yeah, similar to Sevilla, wasn't it?
And then 45 loans out that season.
Jesus. So, I mean, I would count Candreva as a hit.
Yeah, I would as well.
I just think he's a drain on the club's resources now, and I think he got far too many minutes the last couple of seasons.
That'd be interesting. So Candreva moving forward, do you think potentially replaceable?
Like, oh my God, yeah. Get him out
if you
can.
We'll get on to Candreva and how Pat is going to boot him out of the club. 15-16, 88 million in, 94 million out, and this is when they bought in Kondogbia for a colossal amount. They bought in Perisic as well, which is, I think we're going to go miss hit with those pair, right?
Perisic has been a definite hit for Inter.
Yeah, Christ, it's been great.
He's been a fantastic signing.
I mean, Manchester United, you know, probably still willing to shell out £50 million on him, even though he's 30 and he's ran into the
Mourinho
ground.
Mourinho is. I don't think anybody else at the club is.
Yeah, fair enough. And out, Kovacic and Shaqiri. Kovacic went for 27 to Real Madrid.
Yeah, but I mean, at the time, that was a lot of money for a very young player.
And it felt like they had no choice.
Yeah, I'm not surprised they did that. But like,
owing to FFP.
But Shaqiri as well. I mean, like, Shaqiri was not great at Inter. I'd have kept hold of him, given him more of a go, but
he was shit at Inter. And then he went to Bayern and
he was at Bayern before.
Oh, Bayern, then he was at
When we played them in the Europa League, he was over two legs, comfortably their best player. I'm telling you. And that was not a good Inter Milan side. And apparently, I think that he fell out with Mancini. I think that's how deteriorized.
Yeah, because statistically, he was a joke.
So they're the most recent windows. I don't think it's worth delving back past it. And I'm gonna kind of set you up now, Pato. I'll just go over the current squad, and then we're gonna go into possible purchases, aren't we? So, I've not done any squad numbers, like average shots conceded, because that's gonna be your territory in this game, but. Well worth pointing out that the average age of the current squad is 28.5. And as we work our way through their rivals, it gets significantly younger, barring Juventus, whose players are evergreen, for fuck's sake. So Napoli, 26.9, AC, 26.5, Roma, 26.9, Lazio, 26.5. So there's been a little bit of future-proofing going on around them. And I think they're going to have to act this summer to really rectify that. So, despite that, this is a very fit Inter side, you know, in every sense of the word. They've scored more goals in the last 15 minutes than any other team in Serie A this campaign. And, I mean, talking of goals, Mauro Icardi. So, contract negotiations currently on hold with Mauro Icardi. They offered him 6 million euros a year, I believe, but representatives, that's
not enough, is it?
Wandanara weren't happy. He's good. Still in the contract till 2021, but he does have £110 million release clause in his contract for the first 2 weeks of every July for foreign clubs only.
Why on earth has nobody paid that? €110 million in this market?
They might have, and he might have said no.
Yeah, I mean, he's currently scoring at the same rate for Inter this period as R9 was for his period at Inter
Because
Milan.
You've got to think
so
that every
stuff.
Other club that's going to pay that €110 million is going to probably get close to doubling that wage.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So I just don't. There's a myriad of top clubs that are chasing a sort of 24, 25 year old striker who's going to score minimum 20 goals a season.
Yeah,
if
Bayern come in or if Real Madrid come in, then maybe he'll have a think about it. But in the meantime, like, it's entirely possible that nobody serious has offered it.
And he's enjoying being M9, isn't he? He's their top dog. He wields all the power.
He loves
at that
Inter.
Club.
He loves Inter.
How has he released a book aged 23?
He does love Inter, but I feel like Inter and him are a bit of a hit and miss relationship, aren't they?
I think he's 25 now.
What did I say?
23.
He's 25 now.
But I think the fans haven't always loved him, and he hasn't always loved
the
fans.
Sure, but even when the fans hated him, he said, I want to spend the rest of my career here. Mm-hmm. And actually, every time that there have been rumours of interest in him from outside Italy, he's used it to just leverage a better deal at the club.
Yeah, I mean, it feels stupid. I mean, if I was Icardi, I'd be screaming to get out of that club.
Well, also, yeah, I mean, like, if you can say to him, like, if you really, really want to stay at the club forever, let's take this out of your contract and we'll give you 50 grand more a week.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's time to shit or get off a toilet, Mauro, because you've got to get out of that club for me.
Quality. But the option...
Analysis.
The option still open. Go on then. Yeah. So that's I hope it's teed you up nicely for whatever you want to talk about first, Patrick Van Straaten, but the floor is yours.
Well, I want to talk about Spalletti because obviously, generally speaking, we've been pretty positive about Spalletti. Mm. Took over in 2017 after Pioli took the team to seventh the previous year. And we praised him pretty much on the basis of his previous work at Roma, but it's easy to forget he was there for a year and a half. And before that, he was in Russia for 5 years with Zenit. Before that, he was at Roma for another 3 years. So pretty much it's hard to kind of gauge how good he was in Russia. But Roma, very, very good, I thought. Took over in January 2016. Roma were fifth after 19 games under Rudy Garcia. They'd lost three. They'd scored 1.9 per game, conceded 1.2 per game. So they were in pretty decent shape, but they had room to improve, I'd say, especially in defence. After Spalletti took over, they scored 2.5 a game over the last 19 matches.
That's incredible.
So from 1.9 to 2.5, and their goals conceded went from 1.2 to 1. And they only lost one more game over the back half of the season.
Nice.
So that's a big improvement immediately. Yep. And the next season pretty much maintained it. 2.4 goals scored per game, one conceded per game. Second best attack, second best defence in Serie A. They were very, very good that season. I think they finished second above Napoli.
Coincided with Dzeko having that awesome season.
Well, and Salah being excellent and Raheem Ghalam being excellent. It might have just been a combination of talent, but whatever it was, the defence was also very, very good, despite having people who were a little bit unfancied in it, like Fazio, you know. It was still still a very competent defence.
I don't get why their defence isn't good now under Di Francesco. Didn't they have the second best defence in Serie A last season? This season, it's been absolute leaky, what's it called? Leaky sink.
They're pretty leaky last season. They got pretty lucky XG-wise, but I also think bringing in Nzonzi is, he has not been good defensively. He's slowing down significantly. They got rid of Gonalon, who admittedly didn't play much. They got rid of Strootman as well. He went off to Marseille, didn't he? So I think that there's been a, and also obviously Nainggolan too, so there's been a real retooling of midfield.
Gonalon only cost him $5 million, didn't he?
Yeah, Gonalon should have gone 4 years earlier out of Lyon. But yeah, I don't really know what's going on with them, but I'd say basically the upshot of this is that Spalletti is clearly a good manager.
Yeah.
He is able to get more out of the talent available. Now, in 2016-17, before Spalletti arrived, Inter were fifth for goals scored and sixth for goals against. So pretty much deserved to be roughly where they were. First year under Spalletti, finished fourth, obviously. They were also fourth for goals for and goals against. XG had them fifth for both. So pretty much about where we'd expect. Yeah. And overall, a marginal improvement.
And that featured
a
massive
one.
Collapse as well.
Yeah, and also Perisic being a year older, mm-hmm. you know, your second best contributor gets a year older. That's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. A remainder of no goals from midfield.
Yeah. And this year, I think as well, like we've seen another bit of a step back, actually. Defense in particular. Shots against have only increased from 11.6 to 12.2 per game. But expected goals against per game has gone from 0.98 to 1.14. Which is a significant jump. Mm. So they're conceding more shots and better quality shots, which is not a recipe for improved performance. And I think they have a bit of a soft centre. Like, as much as we praise Skriniar and we like Miranda and people like that, once you get through their midfield, it's pretty easy to get good shots off against them. 58% of shots against them come from inside the box. Do you want to guess what percentage of shots against Juve come from inside the box?
10.
That's ridiculous.
38.
38 is correct.
Oh, thank you. Oh, 38 is correct. God.
And Lazio, Fiorentina,
sorry,
Roma,
did you know
Napoli.
I'd
done some research before, yeah.
Lazio, Fiorentina, Roma, Napoli are all ahead of Inter by a few percentage points in this regard too.
XG friends. Okay.
So they genuinely struggle to prevent shots from good areas to exactly the same extent as AC Milan.
So do they not get enough cover from the midfield? Because I feel like Brozovic right now is probably one of the best midfielders in the world.
And I'd say that all their midfielders actually have pretty decent defensive chops. You know, like Nainggolan can defend. Gagliardini is a good defender. Bethino can defend. Mario can defend.
Vallejo, not so much.
So the issue we're saying then is not with the defensive output of the midfield, it's with the defensive output of the defender.
We don't actually know. Like, it might be a structural thing. It's extremely hard to tell. Like, at the moment, it just seems like once teams get through that midfield barrier, they are finding it very easy to get from the edge of the box into the box. Because otherwise, if the defence is an impenetrable line on the edge of the box, what you tend to see is more shots from outside the box.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I watched recently the Inter-Roma game, and Mario and Valero were playing. I mean, Valero in attacking midfield at 34 is probably a bit of an issue. He probably needs replacing. He was a stopgap that's become somewhat of a permanent solution. You'll probably get onto that in a second. But they were playing really well together going forward. Some nice one-touch play, both taking up little, you know, positions in the half space. But big old gap between the defence and midfield, actually, that does require someone like Skriniar stepping out. So yeah. I don't know if they're just not able, they don't have the legs to get back in the transitional phase.
I mean, generally speaking, I would say that one of my issues with this team is not the personnel they have, it's the fact that those best players are not being put on the pitch. Like, a lot of the time I'm like, why is this Inter team not great? Why do I not like the players on this Inter team? And it turns out that all their best players are on the bench or been loaned out. I'm fine with Dalbert as their first choice left back, but they don't play and they play Asamoah. You know, I'm fine with De Vrij, but I feel like I'm seeing Miranda a lot. I'm fine with, actually, I think that Gagliardini, Nainggolan, Brozovic would be an interesting three-man midfield. It would have been interesting if they kept Kondogbia as well, but instead we see Valero Mario. Like, it's very Kandreva still plays a decent amount. Perisic is still playing pretty much every game. His output has dried up a lot this season, and massively. I've never really been a fan of him. So I just generally feel like, at the moment, it feels a little bit like Spalletti is screwing up by not getting his best players on the field, which is fundamentally quite a simple thing. And so far this season, according to expected goals, they're overperforming by 4 goals in attack and another 4 goals in defence. So they've got a plus 15 goal difference. Expected goals would put them at plus 7 and would put them on 25 points rather than 29. That would still make them third best in the league, but it would bring them much closer to the chasing pack than they are currently.
It doesn't represent progress, does it? Which is why we're having this conversation.
So have you identified, Pato, any sort of positions you think are not must signs, but other than them getting the correct players in the correct positions, I feel like there are areas they need to improve?
What I've done is I've looked at... I haven't really profiled many of the players in their squad, because overall, I actually think the squad is pretty talented.
I struggled massively.
What I've done is I've got a list of untouchables. These are the guys I would not sell for anything less than an obscene sum of money.
That's obscene.
And guys who I would not sell.
Full stop.
But it's a little bit, you know, they're not untouchable. Okay. So my don't sell, my untouchables are Brozovic, Skriniar and Icardi.
You're in Beppe Marotta mode now. You've come in, you've said these players aren't for sale.
Under no circumstances do I sell Brozovic, Skriniar or Icardi. And if somebody wants Skriniar, they could pay me 100 mil for him.
That's your spine. That's the spine of Inter Milan.
And that's a great spine. And you've got Handanovic in goal as well, who, by the way, had an unbelievable season last
year. Fantastic goalkeeper.
He's a fantastic goalkeeper. And I don't know, those are the guys who I would not sell unless you're paying me something that is like genuinely...
150 million.
I cannot say no to.
I don't think 100 million is unreasonable for Skriniar in the current
Absolutely
market.
Absolutely not. No. I also don't think it's... I don't think that really like 80, 90 is unreasonable for Brozovic.
100%.
Icardi, I'd say, is probably priced about fairly at 110 million euros. Maybe actually, given the paucity of top strikers in the market, he's a little bit underpriced.
I completely agree. I think Icardi's are closer to a 200 million euro striker.
Because really you can get him. You can get him.
Because you love a headline.
I do love a headline, but equally, I think if we're pricing Robert Lewandowski at close to 100, then we've got... Icardi's like, what, 5 years his junior, banging in a similar number of goals, taking a similar... Like, he's the perfect age profile for a striker for a major European club.
Yeah, if you've
100
got...
100 million euros is nothing.
He's doing it in a team of limited creativity. Yeah, yeah. Imagine him doing it in a team that had... genuinely exceptional creative talent.
Like Romelu Lukaku, what did we pay for Rom in the end? 90, was it?
75. Yeah, how many goals does Icardi score if you can help get his shot numbers from 3 per game to 5 per game?
Yeah, well, exactly. And when I think of... They do have decent talent around them. When you talked about future-proofing the team, I actually think they have future-proofed the team to some degree.
Okay.
What I don't think they have is necessarily a good 11 now. So, but they've got lots of decent...
I've not integrated them into the side.
Well, look, I've got my don't sell list. I've got Dalbert, I've got Vachalko, I've got Lautaro Martinez, I've got Yon Karamo, and I've got Stefan De Vrij.
Yeah.
So all those guys I'd keep. And every single one of those players I've listed, which is 8 players, they're all 26 or under.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's actually the core of a very good side for at least the next 4 years, if you can keep them together.
I agree. I don't actually think you need to sign that many sort of 19 to 23, 24-year-old talents in this Inter side.
But what you do need to do is say to... Maybe Spalletti isn't getting a say in signings, or maybe he's just not being told he needs to pay them enough or whatever. But I do genuinely feel like the problem here seems to be a disconnection between recruitment and management. So I don't know how much say Spalletti's got, because it seems weird that he's not playing these people who've been brought in for quite hefty fees.
Do you know what else? I've got a really weird signing that they might go for.
Okay.
So what I've done is just profile a player that they appear, at least, you know, according to Calcio Mercato, to be going in for quite heavily, you know, which is odd considering, I don't know, Morata is arriving in January, or it's not been finalised yet. Apparently he's flown over to China. They've made a good impression on him. But I don't think anything's signed on the dotted line yet. But, I mean, it's getting that way. But basically, they've been linked with a player called Barella.
Niccolò Barella.
For Cagliari.
They would be extremely lucky to get him.
And, well, I actually don't think, given that he plays in a similar position to Yuncaramo, that he's a worthwhile acquisition for 50 million euros.
He's much more of a centre mid.
So I have down here that he's an attacking midfielder, Patrick.
Sure, but he played centre mid quite a lot last season.
Okay.
Like, and he kind of was the hub of a pretty bad Cagliari side. Whereas Yuncaramo is a winger or a striker.
But do we need another midfielder? It feels like they're stocked.
Well, that would be my issue. Like, if you've got Nainggolan, I kind of am like, you paid this money for Nainggolan, so you can fucking use it.
Like, I was looking today. I was thinking, I went through Cesc Fabregas. Like, do they need it? No, they just don't need Cesc Fabregas. Same with Moussa Dembélé, who they're heavily linked with.
Cesc is on AC's radar, isn't he?
Centre mid is one of the places that if I'm into sporting director, I say we're gonna stick with this. You're gonna roll with this midfield for the next year and a half, and then we'll talk.
So some of the highlight reels I've watched are Barella and his actual listed position as attacking midfield, maybe doing him a little bit of a disservice. Plays more of a central role, And then Caramo, despite having him down here as an attacking midfielder who can play left or right, he's primarily played on the wing. He's at Bordeaux this season, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on loan at Bordeaux.
So I mean, Barella's numbers, 21, 14 appearances, one goal, which was a free kick this season. He's taken 19 shots, 17 of those have been from outside the box. So he doesn't mind a shot from distance, although 10 key passes in the box, 7 outside of it. So he appears to be very capable of a decisive pass, but yet to register an assist. So maybe his teammates are letting him down at Cagliari. I'd be absolutely lying out my teeth if I said I knew anything about Cagliari or had, you know, any further information beyond these numbers. Shots per night, only 1.4, which I suppose is okay from central midfield if you're playing a more reserve role than I first thought. Key passes per night, 1.2. But Caramo,
fair with Barella, I've got his numbers from last season. Last season, 4.2 tackles and interceptions per 90.
Yeah.
And 1.5 dribbles. So what he was doing is breaking up play and then moving his team forward. And I mean, it was a pretty... He's the most attacking in a midfield three. That was how he played for Cagliari last season.
I mean, Juventus also want him.
He was getting fouled.
Well, he's going to go to Juventus then, isn't he?
He was getting fouled twice a game. And like you said, he's still 21. Like, I mean, Liverpool, Juventus apparently both made offers for him. Like,
if Juventus want him,
I just wouldn't be spending 50 million euros on him if I was Inter Milan.
Neither would I. But I do. But I do think he's a talent.
But I think Caramo, I mean, his numbers are great. His actual radar and understat is fantastic. So, I mean, 0.3 goals per 90 this season. Pretty good from a player who's playing in a wider position. One assist, two goals, and six starts with four sub appearances, 2.4 key passes. Like, these are numbers that, as a young player, like, I expected. If you said to me, if you offered up two radars or two sets of numbers and said one of these is a 50 million euro player or a 50 million euro talent, I would think it was Caramo.
Yeah, I mean, 5.6 shots and key passes per 90 combined. His expected goals and assists around 0.5 a game. I mean, he's only played about 500 minutes, to be fair, at Bordeaux this season.
Yes.
So it's extremely small sample size, yeah. But I don't really think there's that great a difference in quality between Liga and Serie A. And it looks like he's ready to contribute at the age of 20. I'd much rather give him the minutes than give Kondreva the minutes, or even Perisic at this stage.
Or rest Perisic.
Who's around the same mark. Like, Perisic is around 0.53 expected goals and assists per 90.
So I know expected build-up is build-up play that leads to shots, right?
Without shots. It's basically all the moves you're involved in, the XG of those, but without taking into account your own shots or key passes.
Okay, yeah. And XG chain.
That's including shots and key passes.
That's including your shots and key passes.
Yeah, so everything you're involved in, passing moves, shots and key passes, the sum of the XG of those moves.
Because that was his standout metric. Yeah, 0.6.
It's pretty good.
Per game, which compares well to top level pros in that area of the pitch. Some of the names I just like lazily threw in there at the end. I mean, they've been linked with Mesut Ozil, which is tasty in terms of, you know, a title for a video.
He's taking home 300 grand a week. Yeah.
I also don't dislike that though. Like, I think if you've got a bunch of you've got a bunch of runners in front of him, you've got Icardi there. Icardi in front of Urso is exciting. And I think if you had a fast guy like Karamo playing off the wing and loads of protection behind him, because they've got so many DMs.
Yes.
They could just play Vecino, they could play Gagliardini, they can play Brozovic all together. Just play those guys behind Ozil. Fuck off defensive work for Mesut Ozil, which, let's face it, he's not going to want to do anyway, and just make him spray passes. And I swear to God, he'll get 35
but
assists.
That is why I'll bring one name to the table that I think would be a decent signing on a 1-year contract, maybe an 18-month contract. Wan-Mata. Free transfer in the summer.
And play him as an authentic 10. Play him as a first time since he left Chelsea.
10. Give him the defensive cover of a Brozovic and a Nainggolan. Play Wan-Mata in front of him, just off Icardi. Let him just drift in and around the edge of the box. He's still averaging 2.8 key passes last season.
Jesus.
Like, just that is way higher than I thought it would be. Get him in as a 10.
Yeah, and he's a... When he has lined up as a 10, he's been asked to man-mark someone, hasn't he, this season?
Well, the trouble is, he does all the shithouse work as well, and Jose won't accept any less, especially because of the past history they've had. So if you could free Wan-Mata up and play him as an authentic 10, he was at Chelsea, he'd be fine for a season.
I had a look at a 10 as well, or a 10-ish player, but a bit more... Basically, I looked for a younger Nainggolan. And the younger Nainggolan is Kerem Demirbay from Hoffenheim. I mean, he's got... He's 25 still. He's got 4 assists and a goal in 900 minutes across the league and Champions League this season. He's got 3.4 key passes per 90. That ranks him 9th in Europe among players with at least 500 minutes played. And to put that in context, the players above him are Paye, Depay, Willian, Messi, Hazard, Pjanic, Sofiane Boufal, and Luis Alberto. So that's pretty damn good company to be in. That's 3.4 is elite. His shooting's fucking all over the shop. 3 shots a game. 2.2 of them from outside the box, but 4.2 tackles and interceptions per game.
Yeah.
And his expected goals plus assists per 90, 0.59, which would rank 2nd at Inter.
Do you think they'd be able to get... I feel like Demirbay. I feel like the energy around Demirbay is that a lot of big clubs just starting to sniff around him a bit.
He's been linked to Arsenal and Liverpool previously, and people have been interested for a while, but we've got to bear in mind that Nagelsmann leaves at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if at the end of the season they say... He says, this is the summer I finally want to go. And they're like, you know what? We'll turn over the team this summer and let you go.
But I wouldn't be surprised either if Nagelsmann went, I'm at RB Leipzig. Do you want to come to RB Leipzig with me?
Yeah, though only if they sell Forsberg. And then you're like, okay, Forsberg's available. Like, I mean, there are interesting options there. So I looked at him and I actually looked at a winger as well.
Who is the winger?
I don't think they can get Nicolas Pepe.
Because I feel like they do need that Perisic.
Who I think is the best young winger probably around. Yeah, available.
We've talked about him before on this podcast. Yeah.
And his goals and assists, his XG has caught up with his goals and assists. And it's lethal. I also thought about maybe taking a punt on Harvey Barnes out of Leicester. Maybe say to Brahim Diaz, look, we will play you automatically. Like, that wouldn't be the worst.
Because I thought about Callum Hudson-Odoi.
That's quite interesting. He's very young.
I thought Callum Hudson-Odoi would be a decent purchase. Or at least we've seen them do the 2-year loan with the optional obligation to buy. If I was Chelsea, I'd be going, you go and have a season at Inter.
Well, they actually stopped him going out on loan to RB Leipzig.
But why would you play him?
He's only got 18 months left on his contract as well. So
why would you bring him in if you're not playing Karamo, though? Karamo already has very good numbers for a young player in a top 5 league. So why do you trust Hudson-Odoi if you don't trust Karamo? That's my issue.
But Karamo's not gone on loan to Bordeaux, no?
Yeah, he's on loan at Bordeaux. But my point is that if you don't think he's good enough to contribute to your side, then why is Hudson-Odoi good enough to contribute to your side at 18?
Yeah, it's a massive risk. It's a massive risk. I just think with 18 months left on the contract, it's probably worth a risk worth taking.
Yeah, actually, that's fair enough.
I've got, just to tap back into the earlier model of picking off players from top clubs who maybe aren't getting the minutes they desire. I'm not sure how, I don't know why this player struck me as a possible target, and I'm not sure how keen Pep Guardiola would be to let him go, but Ilkay Gundogan just struck me as someone that Inter Milan might be able to purchase in another year's time. That could stitch together the attack and midfield quite well, that brings a very well-rounded skill set to the table.
I don't know what he gives us that Brozovic doesn't.
Yeah, there is that.
And we don't get younger, we just get more injury prone.
Yep.
That's my worry. I love Gundogan. I love Gundogan, but like, I feel like all we've done with that transfer is make our team stand still.
I wish I had bloody mentioned him. That's Ilkay off the table.
I like him. He feels like a lot of their players, but he's just... You're going to have to spend a lot to get a guy who essentially is just going to cost you, you know, extra wages for your physio.
Okay. I think Luka Modric is probably off the table. I don't think that's going to happen. He said he wants to retire at Real Madrid. I've got a couple
and
more.
And I wouldn't buy him at this point.
I mean, we've spoke about Rodrigo De Paul at Udinese before, whose numbers are great this season as a second striker, as a winger. They have been heavily linked with him. That actually looks like a possibility. He also has an Italian passport as well. So it makes him more of an appealing prospect. Sassuolo defender Marlon. Have you heard much about Marlon?
No.
Almost four tackles and interceptions. He's only 22, I believe. Centre back. Brazilian. Completes a lot of passes a game. Around 70 for Sassuolo. And with a 94% pass accuracy. So he is getting the backup of... Well, that's the wrong phrase, isn't it, really? He is really garnering interest from top clubs, and it might be worth keeping one eye on that young man. But Joseph, that's it from me. Have you got any more transfer targets?
I think they might end up going in for Matteo Darmian. I think Matteo Darmian's the sort of player Inter Milan might just hoover up on a free transfer this summer. He's not...
Strikes me as a bit of a David Santon, though.
He's not Manchester United quality, and he's probably not even Inter Milan quality, but on a free transfer, on probably... tiny wages back in Italy, they'll probably be pretty happy to take him. He's averaging four tackles and interceptions when he was in Serie A at Torino, and under LVG 2 seasons ago he's averaging 5. Free transfer, Italian, just smells like it's going to be like a Napoli or an Inter Milan Matteo Darmian to me.
I mean, it just feels like it's like Asamoah. Like, it feels like they just re-up their bad transfer decisions. So they got Valero. Okay, now maybe Valero's too old. Let's get Nainggolan to do the same thing.
The other option I had a look at, I just thought wouldn't be the worst backup to Mauro Icardi and available on a free this summer, is Olivier Giroud.
But again, we get older.
I don't mind getting older, though, because we've signed a lot of young players last summer and none of them are getting played. So clearly that's not working.
Sure. I mean, I suppose if you let like Candreva go or Valero goes or whatever, then you're going to get younger overall. But generally speaking, I feel like we bring back Caramo. And the guy I looked at was Francois Camano, who's playing with Caramo at Bordeaux. Mm. He's a Guinean striker cum winger. Like, he's mostly played off the left wing. Can play on the right as well. He's 22. And his numbers are great. I mean, at the age of 20 in Ligue 1, he was involved in 10 league goals, 12 last year. This year, he already has 8 in 16. By comparison, Perisic has 4. Bordeaux are 10th. Their attack is 14th out of 20 in Ligue 1. And when you look at Caramo, 0.5 expected goals and assists this season, 0.53 last year, 0.52 the year before. It's essentially identical to
largely
Perisic.
Largely overperforming in that situation.
In that time? Huh?
Like, largely overperforming given the numbers that Bordeaux are putting out.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. But like 1.7 shots inside the box. This season, he's taken or assisted 73 of Bordeaux's 212 shots in Ligue 1. That's 34%. He's personally responsible for 44% of their total expected goals. Also completes a couple of dribbles, and he actually dribbles more and gets more shots off inside the box in the Europa League. Bear in mind, they're bottom of a group that has Zenit, Slavia, Prague, and Copenhagen in it.
So bad.
And yet his numbers are still great. His contract's up in 2020.
I think what we're kind of all coming to the agreement on is that they actually don't have a terrible squad, but it's being slightly mismanaged by either Spalletti or the people above him, whoever's making the decision to loan in, loan out, and effectively put the players out in the correct position.
It might just be a matter of time, though.
A quick one that I'd add on to the list, if he doesn't get any more minutes at Barcelona, is I'd go back in for Malcolm. I think 12 months ago, he would have been a brilliant, 6 months ago, I thought he would have been a brilliant acquisition for them. Huge shot numbers, a lot of them from outside the box, admittedly, but decent shot numbers, decent creative numbers. I think he was averaging 2.6 key passes a game, wasn't he?
He was the top player under 25 for key passes per 90 last season.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he could well be willing to leave as well. I think Barca will probably go, you know what, in a similar way to how they did with Yeromina, we're just going to cut our losses. It just doesn't fit.
They mostly build down the wings, so it would make sense that they brought in Caramo and Malcolm and said, we're going to carry on building down the wings. On the other hand, it kind of means that Politano is already on the out after just
signing. Where does Keita Balde play as well?
Well, Keita Balde, you don't have to... If you say you've got like a 30 mil or something like that option to buy on Keita Balde, but you can get Malcolm for like 40, I think you get Malcolm. I like Keita Balde, but Malcolm, I think, is the superior player.
He's faring better as a centre forward, and if you get if you get Karamo back or another wide man, you're going to play.
And no centre forward's ever going to start over Riccardi in there, are they?
No, absolutely not. So before we move into Row Z, where basically I send out a tweet an hour before we film the podcast because I haven't remembered to prior and read it to these guys, and you know they have no idea what's about to hit them. Should we just put? Let's do a quick summary of events. So a small rotation of the squad, acquisition of wide talent, an emphasis on bringing the age down a tiny bit, but a lot of that has been taken care of in past transfer windows. And Suning have been investing, but maybe need to invest a little bit more this summer in particular. Otherwise, they're not really establishing themselves as a Champions League club at current.
Yeah, and a little bit more investment in winter windows wouldn't go amiss for Inter Milan either. Over the last few seasons, it's been a bit of a case of we're going to spunk all our money in the summer, and then when it comes to winter, we need the reinforcements. Spalletti particularly was asking for reinforcements last winter window and got very little help. So I think Inter Milan fans totally right. There needs to be more investment from the Chinese owners, but at least they're starting to profile the right player.
Yeah, it looks like they know what the problem is. So it'll be interesting to see where they end up this
and
season.
Beppe Marotta's a great move.
Any predictions for where they will finish?
They're better than Roma. They're better than Milan.
Second for me.
I don't think they're better than Napoli.
They're definitely not better than Napoli at the moment. Third?
Third. Yeah, third.
And then maybe Fiorentina or Lazio.
Them and Napoli will be battling out for second.
I think fourth. Mm-hmm. Because, you know.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Here we go then, gentlemen. It's Rose Ed. It's from the fans. It's their things they'd like to kick out of football this week. And we get underway with Saku and Pofu, who said, "I would kick out yellow cards awarded for running into fans or taking your shirt off." Now, this relates nicely to the Jurgen Klopp incident, doesn't it? Where he ran on the pitch recently after Liverpool secured that last gasp victory over Everton and got an £8,000 fine for it. He did apologise straight away in his post-match interview, and I think Sean Dyche gave him some grief for it in the Burnley game, actually, the subsequent game. But what do you think of this, Rose Ed, then, and Klopp's touchline antics? Do you mind them? Do they annoy you?
I love them. I think keep them in the game. And I think if anybody says that Jurgen Klopp shouldn't have done that, is either a Man United fan who's bitter or an idiot, because there's nothing wrong with that. It's actually so good to see.
Little moaning myrtles.
I love watching like players and managers in particular get extremely passionate. And what did he get? An £8,000 fine, which is, I think, half a day's wages for Jurgen Klopp. And you cannot tell me there's a single Liverpool fan in that ground or worldwide that would not give up half a day's wages to run on the pitch at Anfield and celebrate a winner against the bitter rivals Everton in the last minute.
I don't really understand why their yellow card offence is in the first place. Like, the idea was to stop time wasting, right? Like, it's not that you get a yellow card for taking your shirt off. It's that taking your shirt off is now classified as time wasting.
I don't know. I think
or as delaying kickoff, something like that. And that deserves a yellow card. So it's not the shirt issue. It's just doing that. So that doesn't really make sense to me, because I feel like there are all sorts of ways in which time wasting is tolerated in football. And this is one of the few examples where it's players interacting with fans in a way which is genuinely organic and enjoyable. Yes. Everyone's like, what is nicer than a player like running over to the fans and genuinely when Torreira ripped his shirt off in that North London derby after scoring his first goal for the club against Spurs, I was just like, he was so fucking happy.
Yeah, you did.
And I was just like, is this going to be a yellow card? Like, really? I mean, it just feels a bit over the top. Like, running into the crowd, if you're inciting the crowd, like, say if you run to the opposition supporters,
i.e. Adebayor, book him.
That's bullshit. Fair enough, book him because he's being a twat. But I also feel like time wasting is tolerated all the time in football. The 6 second rule isn't observed. And actually,
the ball's only in play for 54 minutes anyway.
Something like that.
And 30 seconds doesn't make a difference.
And also, in the last year, I feel like so many games as well, more than I've ever seen previously, have been delayed by teams turning up late to a ground. I feel like that's happened a lot in the last year and a half. And I don't know. I just think that's
a booking them all to get off the coach.
You know what I mean? Like these things are bigger issues in terms of if your worry is actually like how long the game is going to take, then observe the rules properly. Make sure that a keeper doesn't get to catch the ball, fall to the ground, lie on it, stand up, bounce it a few times, you know, and then eventually like the ref waves at him and he drops it.
Was it Florenzi for Roma that ran into the crowd to celebrate his first goal with his nan?
Yeah, he ran the length of the pitch.
The captain of the club, been there since a boy. His nan's witnessed his first goal. He's ran into the crowd. That's the sort of thing we want to see in football, isn't it? Pure, honest emotion.
It's just nice. You know, I think about a lot of the greatest moments in sports are like that. Like, do you remember when Goran Ivanisevic was a wild card like at Wimbledon and won the tournament and climbed the... I mean, it's kind of a thing at Wimbledon, but he climbed the stands to go and celebrate with his dad. Yeah. And I was like, fuck yeah. Like, that was a great sporting moment. That. And also, when Eric Cantona karate kicked that guy, that was quality.
Really upset, has it?
that should be encouraged.
So we're all in agreement that, no, it's taking, you know, fan player interaction out of the game a little bit, and we should be a bit more...
Yes.
Less devoid of sentiment.
Separately, Jurgen Klopp does annoy me a bit, but not for this.
I love that he annoys some people. He's the most lovable bloke.
Nah, he's cool. He's like a cool youth pastor.
What does George call him?
He's a Christian grunger. And he is a Christian grunger. He absolutely is.
I don't think he's going to get any better than that. Right, let's have a couple more then. Next up is from... Okay, this one's from VS Game 8. Thank you for sending your suggestion in, mate. If you want to partake in this next week, then look out for our, you know, on our social
tweets,
on our social what accounts, I guess. He said, or she said, the one thing that irritates me is how players and managers are punished for their actions based on reputation rather than the severity of their action. Now, that in itself, this feels like he's a Man United fan. And he's gone on to say, e.g. Jose Mourinho, who's usually much more harshly reprimanded by the football authorities than someone like Klopp or Pochettino. So I think, didn't Jose get a touchline ban for coming out of his technical area? And Jurgen Klopp's getting an £8,000 fine for celebrating with the players on the pitch. So as a Man United fan, Joe, do you think Jose Mourinho is treated unfairly by the... This feels now like talk sport.
Yeah, it does.
Joe, do you think he's unfairly treated by the authorities?
No, Jose Mourinho is not unfairly treated by the authorities. He's overstepped the line so many times that it now is a case of, look, Jose, mate, we're going to have to do you quite harshly because you just will not listen to the rules that we've set in place. Any man who can shove his finger in an assistant manager's eye socket and gouge it, probably not the best bloke. Like, he's not particularly good on the touchline, and some of the stuff he said warrants bans, and some of the things he does warrants bans. Just stop being an arsehole on the touchline and he won't get banned. There's a difference between running on the pitch to berate someone or show off in front of opposition fans and then running onto the pitch and hugging your own goalkeeper.
It's different from a player on the pitch, though. Like, I do feel like the law should be applied absolutely evenly with players. Like, it really should. But I think often it's not necessarily that a player gets kind of booked on the basis of their reputation. It's more that the referee might just have more of an eye on them. So for instance, if Fellaini goes up for a header and I'm a referee, I probably am watching his elbows because I know it's a thing he does.
Yeah,
because
he sharpens them up before he comes on, doesn't
he? Exactly. And then I might book him. Like I don't think that's necessarily the same thing as just giving him a booking for something that's not a yellow card offence. I'm just paying attention more.
Yeah.
And actually, given all this stuff, it took Diego Costa like 3 years to actually get a red card in the Premier League, despite the fact that everyone talked about him as a shithead.
So sometimes fair that reputation precedes you because it's not unfounded.
Well, also, you are in control of your reputation
also,
to some degree.
Each ban is done on a incident-by-incident basis, I think. Yeah. And most of the times, the incidents Jose's been involved in have been pretty rogue. It's not like I can remember a number of times Jose's been unfairly banned.
Custom incidents.
Yeah.
Create your own topping. Right, here we go. We've had a lot about Pele. This one, Steve46, he's just sent me the picture with the original quote on. And I do believe George called him a stupid old fucking on his Twitter, which, again, probably summarises this pretty well. Messi only shoots with one leg, only has one skill, and doesn't head the ball well. why he feels the need to comment on Messi again is beyond me. What do we think to this gentleman? Let's keep this pretty brief.
I think that Pelé's wrong, but there's plenty of wrong opinions in football, isn't there?
It's just like Brexit, isn't it? You're just like, sometimes you just have to wait for opinions to die out. And by that, I mean the people who have those opinions will die out. Like, I mean, I just think that this argument is like, this argument is something, it's about generations. Like, every generation thinks that their best player was the best player ever. And so Pelé's never going to let go of that. You can't really argue with him. Like, I could sit here and say, well, actually, I read a study today which showed that the best finisher since 2006 is Messi by a long, long, long way. And I genuinely did read that. But Pelé doesn't care. Like, Pelé doesn't care at all. And I do actually think, as much as we call him a fraud, Pelé was truly a step forward in terms of what a football player could be. However, Messi is playing the best defences in the history of the game, and he is the best player in the history of the game. Mm. He scores a goal a game, and he's also one of the best creators we've ever seen. I just don't know what Messi could do. What more could Messi do? I don't care if he only has one foot, if he does what he does with it. And actually, he doesn't have one foot. His right foot's pretty good as well.
Yeah, for a man who was part of a cutting-edge Brazilian setup, they're one of the first international teams to actually travel with doctors, to travel with, you know, specific physios. Zagallo was well ahead of the time in terms of that sort of stuff. But I think it was Zagallo, right?
Yeah. He won it as a player, and then he won it as a coach in like 94.
Who was the manager when they won it in 62? I'm forgetting.
What an insane question.
Yeah. Just because I read his autobiography quite recently.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, it eludes me. But yeah.
For some, like Menotti or something.
A player was a... Maybe. It was cutting edge. His opinions are very, very conservative now, aren't they? Yeah, absolute bullshit. So let's move on into Joe's.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Facts with Rafa Benitez.
It's a fact. Facts. Facts.
Right, let's go straight into my facts then. Are you boys ready? Patrick, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Right, okay. My theme this week, seeing as you boys said there should be a theme, my theme is animals. Involves around animals here. Okay,
that's a great
guys.
Theme.
Number one, I convinced my girlfriend to name her cat after Thomas Müller.
Ooh,
there is
okay,
fact
we'll come back to
number
that.
Number one.
Muller, I'm writing it down.
My friend at school, Matt Grimes, who, by the way, went on to get a £2 million move to Swansea City.
Nice. Shout out, Matt.
Well done.
Both killed a pigeon in the same day with a football.
Both of you?
Both of us killed a pigeon.
You and Grimes, eh?
With a football.
Okay.
The third one. I once named a fish I owned Mike Phelan after the Manchester United assistant manager. And he died the same week Mike Phelan lost his job at Manchester United.
I really hope number three is true.
I'm going to go straight out there and say number three is probably true that he named the fish, but I don't reckon he died in the same week that Mike Phelan left Manchester United.
Okay, interesting. Do you want to ask any questions about any of the facts?
Was it Thomas or Müller? What was the cat called?
It's called Thomas Müller.
Or Raumdeuter.
It's called full name Thomas Müller.
I would instinctively think number two, but let's revisit every scenario.
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, Phelan the fish, he was doing these pretty rushed. So feeling the fish, I think he's added
Stop
that.
So
for,
feeling the fish.
I think he's added that for comedy factor at the end of his facts with Rafa Benitez.
Feeling the fish.
It's very strong.
I didn't. I had that.
Did you have another one called Carlos
university.
Quiros?
I did have two fish. They lived in the same tank, but it was called Jaws.
McLaren.
Jaws.
The other
and
one was
Mike
called
Phelan.
Jaws.
But
Mike. The Mike.
Two great loves.
The Mike Phelan one was called Mike Phelan because we used to joke that we had a friend that looked like Mike Phelan, so we called the fish Mike Phelan at university. He was bald.
Hold on, you had fish at university?
I had two fish at university, yeah. They lived in my room. They both did, I'll be honest, they both lasted about a year. But we
not
had
bad
one,
innings.
We
not
had,
bad innings. Better fucking, than Mike Phelan at Hull.
We'll have Petter on us after this.
We had we had a friend that looked suspiciously like Mike Phelan, despite being about 30 years his junior. So we also called the fish Mike Phelan.
So in all these scenarios, is the cat dead as well, or all the animals dead? Is that
the cat Jaws and Mike Phelan?
The cat is alive and
alive and kicking.
I managed to persuade the entire family to name the cat Thomas Muller because I believe it would be good luck's ginger.
Jesus Christ.
Name Thomas Muller because they bought it on the same day he scored the hattie at the World Cup.
So how old is it?
I don't know. What was that, 2014 he scored that hattie? So
no, was it not 2010?
2014.
I mean, I've seen your powers of persuasion in full flow.
I wasn't with Chloe in 2010. Wow. I think it was 2014 he scored a hat-trick at the World Cup. Or a double at the World Cup centre.
I don't know. Whatever.
Your girlfriend's cat in 2014, you've been with your current girlfriend for around 3 years. That takes us to 2015.
I've been with Chloe 5 years in March.
Well done.
So that takes us to 2013. Could your boyfriend...
That takes us to 2014.
Okay, cool.
So you'd only been together about three, four months by the time you did this.
No, I don't know. I feel like it was a year.
I mean, this is a guy who
you said March 2019. Yeah. You'll have been together for 5 years, which means you got together March 2014. Mm-hmm. So the World Cup happened in June 2014 to July 2014.
Could have been the Euros 2016. So, to be fair, can't really remember.
This is a guy.
It was a major tournament that Thomas Muller scored a hat trick at.
This is a guy who called it, you know, someone. A week after starting work, so you know he doesn't. Is
Leap
that
back.
Iconic?
Note that time, Kurt.
It was Milad as well.
So he doesn't mind, you know, forcing his agenda, or you know, or making his opinion
known. That to me,
within weeks of knowing people,
that to me though feels a bit much.
I feel like now he's trying to caveat it with Euros. That might be it, and he's ballsed it up.
I honestly can't remember the tournament that he scored the hat trick at. I'm sure it was World Cup 2014.
Okay, interesting.
I think he got five goals at one tournament.
But was it not against? I feel like did he get a hat against Brazil? Maybe he didn't. I don't know. I feel like it was that game.
The 7-1. The 7-1 was 2014.
No one got a hat trick against Brazil.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, that leaves us with Grimes.
Matty Grimes.
A criminal.
Okay.
He wasn't a criminal.
I said pigeon.
A criminal. Very good footballer, obviously, was at the Exeter City Academy.
I've never
heard
of him.
Was an extremely accurate striker of a ball.
Oh, so it was intentional.
It was intentional, yeah.
That's an added element.
That's a sinister twist, isn't it?
I mean, when I say intentional, we didn't mean to kill the bird.
Don't backtrack now.
But we were on the AstroTurf pinging balls at pigeons, and we managed to kill two in our lunchtime.
Jesus Christ.
So hold on.
After you killed one, you had no regrets, carried on.
It was my question, very similar sort of timing.
No, not a chance. I'm now...
Why?
With similar timing.
Yeah. There was like six of us stood on the D, and you can imagine there's a flock of pigeons. A lot of pigeons in one area.
And we just all
booted balls at them.
Killing a pigeon...
Changes a man.
Killing one pigeon is rare. That's a rare candle.
I've killed loads of pigeons in my life.
Yeah, with a gun or a Jack Russell.
What?
No.
How many pigeons have you killed?
I don't know.
Rough estimate.
I'm not too sure.
No, but why do you not know?
No single digits.
Why do you not know? Because it was
two or three.
Okay, two or three. Cool.
Loads.
I'd say I've killed one or two more
after this occasion.
I've killed zero pigeons. I'm pretty certain.
I've been involved in incidents where people have killed a lot of pigeons.
You've been an accessory to pigeon
murder. I've been involved in incidents.
I've been at least two cars that have run over pigeons. I've seen people throw apples and take the heads off pigeons. Like,
what?
Yeah.
The hand-eye coordination of people in Exeter must be incredible.
Are they all fucking jugglers? Someone took the head off a pigeon with an apple.
Yeah, it was jokes though. It was jokes. Apologies to the pigeon population, by the way. I feel like a bit harsh here baiting this out, but Grimes hit it first, then it was burst.
Okay, are you telling me I believe this now, that his friend did it and then Joe had to match the achievements of his friend?
Yeah, but
it was very similar time. It's not like I waited 10 minutes and I was like, there's another pigeon there, lads, it's pinging.
But do you not feel like as soon as the first pigeon died, you'd suddenly realise what you'd done and be like, you just killed a pigeon.
Yeah, but it was within 10 seconds of each other, and we didn't realise the first pigeon was dead.
So you saw the pigeon kind of like fall to the ground, and you were like, well, I'm having that.
You didn't realise he was dead, you just said he exploded.
When I say exploded, it's just like a big ball of feathers, isn't it? And you just, as a kid, you're just like, oh my god.
Horseshit.
Pinged another one.
My instinct was this is true, and it's possible he's doing a bad job of explaining it to make it sound less true. I don't know, man. Like, it, all the colour he's given feels, it tastes fake.
Okay.
You know, it's not right.
I, I, I actually think.
So we've got Mickey feeling the fish.
If they kill
two dead pigeons.
If they kill a pigeon. If they kill one pigeon after, you know, trying for umpteen amount of times or whatever, they go over, they inspect the body.
There was no multiple attempts.
That's very true.
They go over,
That's very true.
It was not multiple attempts.
They're trophy hunters in Exeter.
It wasn't like we had 15 attempts, they kept settling and we'd do it again.
No, but as soon as...
Wait another half an hour for them to settle. Put some more seed down.
Like bowling, but really slow.
But when you're trying to achieve that, as soon as you've done it once and you see an explosion of feathers, you would, more than any other, would streak ahead to claim your prize.
Okay, so what are you going for? Is there any other Christ, questions you
want
to answer?
I kind of think it's Thomas Muller the Cat.
Is there any other you want to answer?
I hate Thomas Muller the Cat, though.
I genuinely think, I don't know if he's told me this story before, but I think it might be Thomas Muller the Cat.
How did you convince them?
They said, oh, what can we name him? And they're going through a myriad of names. And I went, oh, come on, there's only one name you can call. It's Thomas Muller. He's just got at it at the World Cup.
But Muller's quite a nice name for a cat.
Muller.
Nah, but it's Thomas Muller. Yeah. They call it Tom.
Like a Tomcat. And it's Ginger. Yeah. Hello. Yeah. Hello. No one needs to know the second name. Is it on its pet passport, Thomas Muller?
I don't know. It's called Thomas Muller.
So what are you saying? Do you want to go for one?
I want to go for one, but I was wrong last week.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he's pushed me away from two.
I've still got visions of
slide. Why are you ranking off three? Mickey Phelan and Jaws.
Oh, yeah, it is plausible.
Fuck Phelan the fish.
Jaws and Mike Phelan.
Yeah, but Mike Phelan was a joke's name at university. That's so funny.
What year did he leave United?
I was midway through the year to 2013. I think he left when Moyes had the clear out.
The timing's right because Fergie left when I was in my third year of uni. Joe would have been second.
Fergie left in 2013.
It was part of the clear out from Moyes.
Maybe it is Mike Phelan, you know.
Would Joe have been there? Would Joe have been at university in the summer?
Something rings a bell about
that.
Would
he have been at the university this summer, though, mate? Because the clear out was in the summer, no?
Yeah, but I took the fish home.
He's 24 now.
Just leave the fish in my room to die.
Well, they only lasted a year, you said.
Yeah, he's 24 now. It's 2018.
No, as in, would he have... He'd have been at university, but would he have...
When Phelan left.
Yeah, Phelan... Would he... He might have transported Phelan back by now. In which
case surely he doesn't just leave Phelan.
Yeah, I took Phelan home with me in a car.
He didn't just leave Phelan in halls to
him
fend
and,
for
him
himself.
Him and Jaws, both just in two plastic bags.
Yeah, and you come back and see which one survived.
Fish at university, by the way, is
death
fucking
match.
Ridiculous.
Fish
death so match. Funny, though, bro.
No, I knew a bunch of people would fish at uni.
I mean, although I'm almost entirely convinced that the poor thing died because people were pouring vodka.
I've told you about my fish, haven't I? The one that had a swim bladder disorder and had to feed it peas every night just so it sunk.
Just tie a rock to it. That'll sort it out.
Right, let's make a decision.
Like a lead.
Let's make a decision.
I kind of want to go for Mike Phelan, though.
Okay.
My heart says it. Okay. What did you say? The cat?
I think one, but I'm not going to watch.
The cat's just so boring.
I'm going to take the coward's way out. And I'm going to give you the power because I don't want to be seen as a megalomaniac.
Give me a number out of 100 for how much you want to go for one.
60.
Oh,
that's
not bad.
So strong.
It's not bad. But we've got 100% on these, I think, so far.
You've had a good nose for these at the start.
Come on, Patrick.
Yeah, this one I've got no idea. I want to say Phelan, but...
I think he had Phelan the fish.
Yeah.
But he didn't die in the week that Phelan left United. Yeah, I agree with that. Maybe that's it. Like, I just feel like I'm certain I've heard about Mike Phelan the fish. You know what? Let's go for one. We'll go for one.
You're going for Thomas Muller, the
Thomas
cat.
Muller.
100% correct.
Yes!
Thomas Muller, the cat. If I managed to convince him to name it after that. The other two just completely made up. I did go to school with Matt Grimes. Shout out. I don't know where he is now. I think Nottingham, Northampton. But
so you didn't have fish at uni. I thought you would.
Yeah, I did. But I only had one that was called Jaws.
Phelan, where has that come from?
I don't know. It's good. Just thought that would be pretty funny. And then the pigeon one just completely made up. Who kicks balls at pigeons? You have to be a psychopath.
Well...
To nail two as well.
Yeah, in a minute. It'd be crazy. Although I have seen a pigeon's head taken off by an apple. Shout out George P. I won't say his full name. Who's now a professional cyclist, by the way.
The reverse William Tell.
Honestly.
Knock its head off with an apple.
Absolute zinger. Come out of his arm. Come out of his arm like Matthew Hoggard.
Like Sourav Ganguly.
It did. Come out of his hand like Matthew Hoggard. And we all just sat there and went, bloody hell, that's going to kill it. And it just... head was just clean off. It was like a guillotine. It was an apple-shaped guillotine. This poor pigeon, it's had a chance.
Oh,
brutal
brilliant.
Scenes. And do you know what? We all shat ourselves because we thought it was gonna, we were going to get expelled.
What the... you thought we were going to be expelled.
Right.
On that bombshell, that is the end of the podcast. If you'd like to submit a topic, please get at us on our Twitter handles, which are probably in the description below. Anyway, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.